This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Online, tsn1050.ca, and up on your home smart speaker. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Mike Johnson in here as Noodles calls another game tonight. And the Leafs are back in action tomorrow night. The Raptors back in action on Thursday. And the NBA All-Star game came and went. I don't think we're going to remember a lot. I guess Steph Curry, but it's not like we're not familiar with Steph. And, yes, he can hit shots from half court. We knew that. I'd like to see him try it in a game. I don't think he'll be encouraged to do it in a game. I have been a little bit taken aback by that reaction. Like, we're just now recognizing the greatness of Steph Curry and understanding how he has changed the game, and he really has with his shooting ability and the way Golden State played. But this isn't going to go beyond what they're already doing. I don't picture a time in the NBA's history where guys are going to be legitimately jacking shots from half court. Like, how does that make sense?
Dude, don't kid yourself. They remember that playoff shot that Lillard hit?
Dame Lillard did it. Yeah.
It was an important game, an important moment. He just got over half court, and he was just staring the guy right in the face, and he just said, "Watch this, man." And it's like, I don't know how you stop that. And I understand it's not going to be with regularity, or it seems it wouldn't be that way, Brian. But don't shock yourself if it just continues to go farther back and farther back. I don't know how ridiculous it can get, but it's outrageous the way these guys shoot the ball.
They have the ability to do it, and I know what you're talking about. We saw Kevin Durant do it a lot. We've seen Steph do it. We've seen Klay
Thompson.
Kevin
Durant had two statement threes in the playoffs, both championship runs, I believe, where it was just right over half court, stop up. It was a stop-up three with just like nothing.
It was
incredible.
Outrageous. It was incredible, and he hit the shot. And I'm not saying they don't have the capability of doing it, and I'm not saying we may not see it a little bit more. I'm just not expecting at any point a coach drawing up first quarter plays where from half court you're jacking shots like that. I just don't see why it would make sense. And, yeah, the best players in the world might hit one from time to time. They're going to miss a lot from there, a lot.
But it does illustrate, like, not half court, or like they call them logo threes when their heels are still on, like the center court logo. But the fact is, I don't know, whatever the 3-point line is, 22 feet or something, like, you got to stretch that out by 10 feet at least to, like, comfortably guard Lillard or Curry in a game. Like, they'll shoot from 7-8 feet beyond the arc and treat it like a regular three and hit it with the regularity of a regular three. And I think that's what's changing. Like, you have to extend your defense 30 feet out away from the basket. Like, that's never happened before.
No, you're right. It's like a press defense where it's not because there's time restraints or because you think someone doesn't have handles or you're up against it and you're way behind in the game. It's just simply based on this evolution. But I think half-court shots, like we saw last night, Lillard and Steph, and those are two guys that can do it. There's maybe 10 guys in the league. You know, like, we're not going to see Chris Boucher in a couple of years jacking shots.
It's pretty cool, though.
Listen, it's very
cool, though, back-to-back.
It's very
cool. Like, okay.
But I don't know if I want to see the game get to that point. Like, that's Globetrotter area. Like,
dude,
that's
already there,
ridiculous, Brian.
How many times when you're watching a game now, it's just jack up a three, jack up a three, jack up a three. It's like, I don't even feel like this is basketball. Like, all the fundamental plays that make basketball fun are just like, okay, it's 3-3. I don't know. I don't find that enjoying. Unless it's Steph Curry doing it in the playoffs, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm watching right now.
Yeah, it's a very different game. It's the equivalent, in a way, of like the shift developing in baseball, where it's analytically driven. And it's
corner threes are the highest percentage play to take in basketball.
And it's simple math. If I hit a bunch of shots that are worth three and you're hitting a bunch that are worth two, I'm going to win. Like, that's basically, it's not that hard to figure out.
And match you at 50% at two.
Yep. Exactly. So, yeah. But to O's point, I'm with you, though, in terms of it just sometimes, like, we saw Houston there for years, not even that long ago, a couple years ago, when Harden was there and Paul was there and P.J. Tucker, and all they did was jack threes. They at one point in a playoff game, I think, missed 27 in a row.
Against Gold State when they were up.
27 in a row, and they kept shooting them. Like, that's where – who's on the bench not making an adjustment? But it's just a commitment to the game plan.
Well, Mike D'Antonio is the head coach there, and he loves that kind of up-tempo
Oh,
stuff.
yeah.
But it's like you can't be like you. It's hard to be a basketball player now if you can't like step out and switch on pick and rolls because that's what everyone wants to do and
Yep.
guard a little guy 25 feet in the basket. And if you can't make a three, it's hard to be a player in the NBA because 8 out of the 10 guys in the court can always make threes, and that's how the court is spaced. So if you can't, then you're just an anchor out there.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's and that's why small ball exists the way it does. That's why you've got guys like Chris Boucher who are starting to flourish. I just mentioned him. But Chris is a tall dude. He's 180 pounds. Like
if
he,
release.
If he
He's
were in the
ugly
paint,
release.
If he were in the ugliest release, but he hits shots.
Worst.
If
yeah.
he were in the paint with Shaq in 1995, you'd be calling the police. Like there would be a murder on the court, and you'd have to find a way to determine whether or not there was guilt involved. But Shaq doesn't exist anymore. Like, that's the crazy thing about where the game is today. Shaq, I still think, would be incredibly effective. But you'd have to build a team around Shaq and play a very different style than what everyone else in the NBA is playing. You know? And I wonder if there can become another guy like that who will shift this back in that direction. Where it's like, we have to defend it. They're just throwing it into the paint all night. And I can't have a guard switch on Shaq. He's going to kill the guy.
Right.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. What's happening, Ray?
Yeah, you know, nice day out here. So,
there you go.
You know, busy, got lots going on. I'm just listening a bit there. And so, through the analytics of it, of course, what helped change all that is that they found like the 2-point basket just clearly wasn't, because the guys could shoot the three better, that the 2-point basket wasn't as valuable.
Right.
So they just started spreading out and look at the, you know, the size of these monsters that can they shoot a three and their athleticism. They get around the court and they're like, oh, wait a minute. We don't even want a 320-pounder that stands under the hoop. I don't want that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's weird, isn't it? Because we talk about how would Mario Lemieux do today? And we can all debate it 100 different ways, but like how would Shaq, who would he play against?
Honestly, I don't know. It's a good question. Like, there's still some bigs in the league, clearly. There's some big, but you look at a guy like Jokic, who is now the modern-day center.
Right.
And Jokic is jacking threes and passing the ball like crazy. And Shaq was just a demolition man. Like, throw it into the paint and get the hell out of the way. Like, guys were terrified of being stuck in the paint with Shaq. And you're right. I don't know how it would work today.
It kind of worked both ways. Like, no one can cover Shaq, but Shaq can't cover anybody else either.
Exactly.
And
so he'd get down there, the hack a Shaq would start
yep.
right, you know, right
Early.
Away.
Yep.
He'd hit 51% of his free throws, and then he'd have to try and defend these gazelles.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
you know,
it.
Like, it's a really interesting discussion that, you know, to try and even picture him playing in, like, somebody like him in today's game. Like, what would Dikembe Mutombo do?
Just a good point. Try to block
Gobert.
Shots and yeah, but Rudy can get out and block the perimeter. Now it's all you
got
to
run.
You have to guard the perimeter a little bit, right? Like you have to get. You're going to get dragged out there at some point. Like Joel Embiid is a massive dude. Embiid's probably the closest thing to the conventional like massive center, but he can hit threes. He shoots threes, and if you get him out into the perimeter and he's up against a big, he might be able to guard him, right? Like he might be able to guard you. But Mutombo couldn't do that. Shaq couldn't do that.
And those were the dominant, you know, players of their era
right.
among them in their position.
Well, to transition into hockey, I think the equivalent conversation would be, can you build like an old school tough team in today's game? Like back in the NBA, if you're going back to the 80s and 90s, can you build a team just of monsters that are going to own the paint, protect the paint, slow the game down, half-court basketball.
Detroit Pistons.
Detroit Pistons, exactly. Yeah. Can you build a team in the modern-day NHL of guys who are 6'2 and up, 2'10 and up, not the fastest skaters, but mean, nasty, looking to pick
LA
fights?
LA Kings, man.
Can it happen? Can it work?
Well, I guess that's the closest equivalent, isn't it? Is LA when they won their cups, mm-hmm. like those guys were beasts. And you know, if I remember their power play, you know, like which I always look at is the collection of their skill guys. It was like running uphill. Every time they got a power play, the only thing that happened was 2 minutes got off the clock. They never scored. Right. And then they'd go back to 5-on-5, and they'd just grind people into dust. And then they'd continue on. Their skill player, was, of course, is Kopitar, and Kopitar's big. He's a big dude. But, man, a lot of things would have to come together to make it work. My first thought is, no, you can't. They wouldn't be able to keep up. The rules are different. You couldn't slow people down. You'd be chasing the puck all the time. You'd lead the league in hits, but you'd never have the puck.
I think you're right.
What do you think about then? Daryl Sutter did that to great effect in L.A. Do you think he tries to bring something like that to Calgary? I mean, things have changed. Personnel, the team's different, right? Like, how do you think he approaches Calgary then?
Well, I mean we know this is that he likes to play a certain way.
You think? Right?
And so, what are you going to get Johnny Gaudreau to do? The guy weighs 155 pounds.
Yeah, not what Kyle Clifford did.
Right. So, like, I think Daryl's got that thing about him that, he comes off like the hokey old farmer and, like, he doesn't pay attention. And the guys in L.A. told me they couldn't believe, like, how into analytics he was, which just shocked the heck out of me. I'm like, really? Like, I can you even make that picture? And I couldn't. But I think Daryl's got... I mean, my guess is he's got a couple of tenants that are, this is it. You're playing this way. It's direct. It's physical when you can be. You're fighting for loose pucks. All the things that Calgary doesn't do, or they do them once in a while. Like, I think that's part of what he does. But I think he's got to be smart enough to know that the game's different. The players are different. The players he has are different. And so, like, to try and coach like L.A. would be, in my mind, would be a losing proposition. You don't have the same pieces.
No, you don't. With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, we were teeing up the Leafs-Vancouver two-pack of games with the expectation the Leafs would carry over what they did in Edmonton, and Vancouver was in trouble and obviously had not been playing well. And then Thatcher Demko gave them great goaltending. A couple of wins, their big boys showed up. Besser had a good weekend, and they get their two games. They get their 4 points in reg. Yet in Toronto, I don't think the mood has shifted. I don't think anyone is panicking, nor should they.
One more game, Hazy.
Yeah, we're probably one more game away. A blowout to Winnipeg tomorrow. Morning. We've been down this road before. We know well enough how things work. But the conversation we've been having is one that's been consistent with the season. Like, the idea that the lineup is in flux and could change at some point. And I think Thornton came into the spotlight, in the two games in Vancouver. Mm. And maybe more so because Matthews appears to be in a position now where he could use a little bit of help, right? He's not 100%. He's grinding a little bit more. This is where you lean on your line mates a little bit more, and Marner can do it for him. Jumbo didn't really look like he could. So what do you see happening here? Where do you think that goes?
Well, I think what was concerning to me when I watch it, like right away, like at the very beginning of the year, of course, you look and you're like, man, there's no way Joe speed-wise can skate with those guys. And it can be today, tomorrow, next month, it's all the same. He's not going to be quick enough to play there. He's got to play with his head. He's got to play with his hands. He's played 14 games. And, they go into Vancouver in game one. He plays one shift in the third period. And then the next time he's in and out of that line, it's like I'm assuming the paces of the game is going to quicken like it does every year. That's going to be a spot to be focused on, because it's nice to have that third line. If Engvall can keep that role, if he can keep that spot, it's kind of nice to have that line. But damn, Hyman's good. And, man, he does a lot of work. If you can find somebody to play there, then maybe you can keep Hyman away from them. Otherwise, he kind of looks like the spot or the guy that has to be there for me. Like, look what happened in, so Marner turns over pucks on the third and fourth goal, both of them. You know, he burped that one up on the third goal. And the fourth one, he was dead tired. They were out there for a long time. He tried to drop pass, and it ended up in the net. So they're all now, they're just a little squeeze of the stick, a little press, and they could use some help. And, like, Joe just wasn't able to give it to them. I think it's a point that you have to look at and will be continually looked at until the deadline.
Yeah, and see what they have. And they do have a lot of options, right? They got a lot of pieces that can slide up there, including Zach Hyman. And I wonder, his contract's up, and without necessarily talking dollars, has his case been helped more than anyone this year? It seems like the realization of just how important, how versatile, and how pivotal he is to making so many things work on this team has never been more apparent. Like, he seems like he's in a pretty good spot to get, you know, a decent contract out of Toronto.
Yeah, the problem I think he's going to have is he's going to get a more decent contract somewhere else. Yeah. Right.
Like, what do you think somebody would pay him, Ray, if it just, like, just, we're just spitballing here for the sake of doing it. If it's open market and somebody says, hey, Zach, do you want to come play here for X amount? What is it?
Well, it's north of four.
Oh, God, yeah.
Is it five?
I think
can't
so.
Can't be.
You say it can't be, cap. Mike?
I say can't be. Like, I think between four and five is kind of where he goes.
Johnny, if you're looking at him, wouldn't you say, okay, if he's playing with Matthews and Marner, wouldn't you first start out by saying, well, I'm as half as good as them, so shouldn't I be paid half of what they make? If the reference point is William Nylander, it's like, if he's making 6.9, I got to make 5.5. I might not score 30 like him, but I'm going to get you 25 and bust my ass every shift.
When Edmonton has $22 million in, or $25 million in cap space this year,
they
and you're
would
thinking,
love to have him.
Wouldn't you? Like, yeah. Oh my! If you're one of those two big guys, you're like, man, I like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think the problem Toronto's, you know, again, we're talking March 8th here, but, like, assuming Zach continues to play at a rate kind of the same as this, the problem Toronto's going to have is Zach Hyman's not going to have two options. He's going to have about 16. Like, he's going to be a desired player.
Yeah, he's worthy of that. He's worthy of that desire. He's a good player, really good player. Yeah.
And one other thing, if you're Brian, sorry, if you're struggling, say you're a team that's, you know, you're just trying to jump a step, or you're a very good team, but say you're trying to jump a step and you're trying to, you know, we always hear about that elusive culture and you're trying to build your culture. Wouldn't you want that work ethic to be a central part of that? I would.
No, he defines those intangibles and, you know, genuinely good guy, you know, all those things that come with the package. I don't know what that's worth on a piece of paper, you know, on a contract, but his stats can back up a lot too. I mean, he's put up good numbers. It's not just, hey, he's a workhorse in the corners. Like, he's scoring goals, putting up some points. He's going to have
a
compelling case.
Hayes, like, who scored, like, Pat Maroon almost scored 30 with Connor McDavid. Chiasson scored 20-something with Connor McDavid. Like, you know, so he's not playing with Connor McDavid, but he's playing with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So his 24 goals, while impressive, six of which are empty netters, while impressive, like, I'm leery if I get him in a different situation playing with Dylan Larkin and try to help out Detroit.
Right.
You're going to get everything that Zach brings, which is great. Leadership, effort, energy, defense. You're not going to get 25 goals or the 28 goals he scored in his last 82 games, whatever the number is, because, you know, he's been in a perfect situation. Now, Edmonton's interesting because he could land in a very similar perfect instance, but most teams don't have those kind of players to put him with.
That's
valid. I mean, don't you think, Johnny, that's part of my – isn't that what pro scouts are supposed to do? Isn't that what management's supposed to do? They're supposed to look at a guy and go – yeah, and we know how many times do guys get paid off a career year, and you're like, he's never doing that again. Like, you know it. As us knuckleheads watch from the outside, we're like, that guy's never scoring 30 again. Oh, would you look at that, 6 years at $37 million. And you're like, what the hell are they thinking?
Happens all the time, and no one ever learns. No one ever learns.
Vancouver's got Louis Erickson here collecting dust. They can't wait till his contract is up. That year, I'm sure there's other years, but that year may have been the grossest overpay of money ever. Oof. Look
Andrew
at those
Ladd.
Free agent.
Kyle Okposo, David Backes, Louis Erickson.
Why can't you be saying Mike Johnson, Jeff O'Neill, Ray Ferraro, Brian Hayes?
We wish.
Because none of us would be on this phone right now.
Be watching it from the Bahamas.
Well, they're all still in the league. Like, Milan Lucic was a part of that crew, too, I believe. I think that was when he signed in Edmonton. Yeah. So,
hey, by the way, I don't know what you guys thought. When you watched him fight Darnell Nurse on Saturday,
man,
I was a little nervous for Nurse, and he's a tough, tough kid.
I thought the same thing. We were sitting there watching it, my wife and I. I'm like, oh, Nurse is in trouble. When he had him bent over the boards, like, just like a piece of clay, I'm like, this is really not going to be good. Like, he is a monster. And you could tell Nurse knew what he was in for, because when they stood up and the refs got in, he gave him a quick tap on the pants like, we're done, right? We're moving on here. And Lucic was like, yeah, I'm done too. We got our message across. But Nurse, to his credit, he stepped in there and he took a couple, like, bombs. And you just get thrown. It's like being mauled by a bear. Like, Lucic is just a monster. He's a monster. And
that game started out, and you're like,
quick fights, and here we go, Battle of Alberta, and that's got potential to keep growing. They play each other a lot more, and I think at this point, all eyes are on the Boston Washington rivalry because of the players involved in that. And we saw over the weekend, Tom Wilson got suspended 7 games for his hit on Brandon Carlo, and was not. Technically, like Rule 48, I believe, is the rule where it's a direct shot to the head. Did not fall in line with that. But based on the whole circumstance, based on the hit, the pace, what happened with Carlo, Wilson ends up getting 7 games. He will not protest that, so he's going to sit for 7. What do you make of the hit, the reaction, the suspension? Where do you stand on that, Ray?
Often I see a hit, and like my first my gut tells me right away suspension or not. It's not always right, but right away I was like, oh, that's bad. Like, that, it just looked bad. It seemed bad. It was hard and fast. You know, like, the hit was fast. And so as I'm watching it, I'm like, the biggest problem I have with it is we always hear, oh, he didn't hit him in the head first. It was, he nicked his shoulder pad, and then so that means the hit's okay. But this time it's not. He did hit his body first, but it's not okay.
But, Ray, the question I have to you, if I'm Tom Wilson, and we're not going to get into a you-know-what about this, but when you're that size, I don't know how he's supposed to avoid it. That's the only question I have. He's a big man, and certain parts of the opposition's body are going to come into that way. And what I saw, I rewound it and watched it 10 times, Carlo's head right before impact goes down towards his chest, and I'm like, man, your head, you're putting your head downwards and putting it in a vulnerable position when a guy that's 6'5" is coming into the corner. So I really don't know what Wilson is supposed to do there.
But in a way, that's kind of my point. Like, I knew he was going to get nicked, I felt like he was going to get nicked pretty good. But the communication we get from the league oftentimes talks about when guys make a hit, they'll say, no, you see, he hit through the body. Yeah, he got to his head eventually, but he hit through the body.
Tyler
and then
Myers
this time, right. Like, it, but so guys, like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, it's more of a gut feel rule than it should be. I'm a big proponent of a lot of the European rules. I watch these games a lot. I do a lot of them. And sometimes the penalty seems way too harsh, but lots of times it just seems about right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he doesn't get a penalty at all and then a 7-game suspension. So that tells me there's a disconnect between the discipline committee and the officials on the ice. Wow. Because if that was a 7-game suspension, shouldn't they have at least whistled him for something?
Do you know what made it a 7-game suspension? Is the media outrage and people bitching and whining and complaining about it. And Tom Wilson's got to be out of the game and the fake outrage crowd. That's what made it a 7-game suspension. I thought Frank Saravelli had a valid point when he tweeted out, I don't even think that's a bad hit. And I'm like, you know what? I agree with Frank and I respect him a lot. But I'm not even going to go there supporting it or retweeting it because I don't need to deal with the nonsense from people out there. I think the media outrage and the fake outrage is what got him the seven games.
Well, there's no question, you know, the league's quite aware of the, you know, of the noise around it, for sure. If Wilson wants to hit like that, however, if he keeps it, and I hit three guys in 18 years, two of them by accident.
Don't kid yourself. We saw you beating that guy up with no equipment on him.
Yeah,
that's my ballpark right there. Some guy on the ice in tennis shoes. But if he keeps his stick down, that hit looks way different. If he leads with his stick on the ice, I don't know if you guys agree or not, that looks different. It might be a different result. It might be a different hit. But when his hands are up and he makes that hit, the guy is a steamroller. Mm-hmm. And people get hurt. And in the game today, I didn't think there was any way he was going to escape with nothing.
Well,
I just
especially considering who he is, his track record, you're just not going to get people sympathizing for Tom Wilson. It's not going to happen at any point in his career. And I think the outcome factors in, too. Carlo went to the hospital. He spent the night there. That's going to factor in. But really, it doesn't make a difference if it's one game or seven. It's the fact that they suspended a hit where they said it was boarding. And as Frank pointed out, Cervelli, it wasn't a hit from behind. That is potentially opening up Pandora's box here.
And I think that's the important point. Tom Wilson, it's hard because it's Tom Wilson. Like, if it was Jeff O'Neill or Mike Johnson or Ray Ferraro, like, it's a different kind of conversation because it's not him. But I think if you were to ask Tom Wilson and the Cap guys if that's an okay hit, I think they honestly would believe, forget about reputation, like, that's okay. Like, guy's head's down, I hit him through the chest, and, like, it's unfortunate he banged into the glass and hit his head on the glass and got hurt. But that has always been okay. And if that's no longer okay, that feels like a shift. Like, that's kind of news to them, mm-hmm. and maybe news to the rest of the league. And I think that's you talk about the videos the player safety sends around, and it's okay that the rules change and that the standards change, and that may become a suspendable hit, but it's hard to do that midstream. If the players didn't know, head down, clean hit, I glide in there, hit him in the head, hit him through the chest, he bangs mm-hmm. in the glass, he falls, I'm up for a tenth of the season, or an eighth of the season, I'm getting suspended. I think that's the disconnect. Is, like, I think players, quite honestly, might not have appreciated that could be suspended for a hit just like that.
Okay, and so, MJ, you bring up something that jogged for me there in discussing that. So, as we talked earlier, you know, the injury with Carlo going to the hospital and clearly concussed, and damn, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants it.
No, I think we lost Ray.
Nobody wants to hear it either.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. No one wants to see it. No one wants to hear your follow-up there. We'll have him follow up tomorrow because we're at the end of the road here with Ray. But I am curious what jogged his memory there, where he wanted to go. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good point, though, Johnny, about how we never ask how the players around the league respond. It's always what does the media guy think, the fan, you know, what is the head coach in Boston, as if he's not the most biased human being on earth.
And I don't want to hear Brad Marchand saying it's gross.
Exactly.
And I don't want to see TJ Oshie saying it's fine. Because we know they're biased. They're not
being
biased.
Honest. You're biased. Let's hear from player X on Team Y.
I was doing therapy on my shoulder this morning, and there was an NHL player there, and it was just basically he really couldn't pick a side. He was like, that could go either way. It's like, because it's Tom Wilson's a factor, because the guys in the hospital is a factor. There just wasn't really a hard line on it, and he plays in the league right now. So,
but if he can't pick a side, that tells you that.
Well,
and he basically got
It's a gutless stance from the player.
But he got a 10-game suspension for a hit that a player might not be sure. Oh, that's got to be a suspension.
Johnny, what do you think? Let me ask you this, Mike. What do you think would happen to Austin Matthews if that was Austin Matthews that went into the corner? What would he be looking at right now? I guarantee you not a 7-game suspension. I guarantee
it. No.
No way.
No, you're right, because Tom Wilson's history, although not a repeat offender by salary standards, his history does play effect.
You know.
But it was outrage.
Human.
Everybody was tweeting, get Tom Wilson out of the game.
It's him,
and they're like,
a psychopath that night. Like, people saying, this guy's a psychopath. He's got to get out of the league. I'm like hang on.
Well,
like, you might not like him.
But that's another thing I'd like to get to with other players around the league, where we all grew up playing, and your size is supposed to benefit you. Like Tom Wilson being a 6'5" giant who can skate, that is a good thing. Where these rules, if we're changing them, are suggesting it's not. You know, where if he hit Carlo in a position he's technically allowed to hit him, then what are we doing here? You know, there really is the potential for a slippery slope. It makes it a difficult conversation because of what happened with Carlo and because of the character involved in Wilson, which, again, I'm not going to sit here and empathize for Tom Wilson. He's thrown some bad hits in his career. He's done some things he knows was stupid. But you're right, oh, if that's Austin Matthews on player X.
$3,500 fine.
If that.
Yeah, I'm not sure max, it's anything. $5,400, whatever it's called, right?
Right. And that's where the league has to figure out, where are we going with this? What's going to be allowed, what isn't? Because if you're penalizing a guy because he's so big and so strong, then that's going to change the dynamics of the game as well.
I think two things. One, the league has to, whatever the standards are going to be, and if they're changing, and that's okay that they change, they should. What's the 70s is not the 80s, not the 90s, not now. That has to be communicated before suspensions are given.
Right.
You can't say, oh, you know what, we don't like them now, we'll give you 10, so everyone knows it's 10. You can't have that.
No, you can't be
reactive.
I need
to know the rules of the game, and then I go and play accordingly.
Yep, that's
right. The other thing, so I mean, that's rule number one. And the other thing is, I just wonder if the league can get that out to the players and then have the players sign off on it fast enough. I just don't know if there has to be some sort of conversation about, you know, onus of the hitter, like in football. You know, you're not allowed to hit a guy who's kind of being engaged with another player getting tackled in certain ways.
Yep.
And growing up, we were always taught, you got a guy with his head down, trolley tracks, you hit him. Like, you hit him clean, not in the head, but you go right through him as hard as you can.
That's the only time I ever hit a guy is when he had his head down. I never hit a guy that was looking me in the eyes. You get hurt.
Of course. Why would you? Because it's going to hurt you back. You're a smart guy. Absolutely. But I wonder if that's the other part of the change. And the NFL's implemented that. Like, if Brandon Carlo's not ready for the hit because he's engaged with Verano behind you, or he's in a vulnerable spot because his head is down looking for a puck, I wonder if, you know, that's where they're headed, where that's now a hit. You can't hit a guy hard. You can bump into him because you got to get the puck back.
Well,
but you can't blow him up like we once could.
That's bridge way too far, because then you're the next layer to that is no open ice hitting, and then the next layer to that is no hitting at all. And
no
then
hitting.
Your sport isn't what it always has been, and it's already changed a lot, in some ways for the good, in some ways for the bad. But that's like, you've got an existential moment here that, because of emotion, people aren't going to see it that way. They're just going to say, Tom Wilson, hospital, suspension. And the league is not supposed to think that way. The league is not supposed to approach it that way.
But then you're okay with Brandon Carlo, Austin Matthews, Jeff O'Neill, whoever. You got your head down, you're beside the glass, you're getting hooked by someone. Someone can come down. If they hit you clean, they don't charge you, they don't get your elbows up, they don't hit you in the head, and they run you right over.
When has that not been okay? Why would it not be okay today as opposed to ever? Like, since when is a good hit not a good hit or not wanted?
Because we know more about brain injuries, and they're worried about them.
Well, then again, Johnny, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, it's either you're a contact sport or you're not. You know, like, well, you just – it's like football. You either – you're going to have contact. It's a, we all know it.
You but go what does on football do all the time?
Nah,
football
you pissed them off,
all the
Johnny.
Time.
Nah, yeah, but, you pissed
but
them
not
off.
To the point where you're saying a good hit is not a good hit.
Well, what was a good hit in the NFL 10 years ago was not a good hit today.
Yes, it is. 90% of the time, it's not
a
head-on-head
hit. You can't lower your head when you're tackling an open
field. That's
not
what you just described, though. You just described a good hit. You just said you get someone in a – yes, he may not be looking for, but if you get him shoulder-to-shoulder, at what point do we want shoulder-to-shoulder not working in this game?
That standard changes. It changes over time.
It can if you allow it to, if the league allows it to, and if they want to go
in that direction. I guess that's the conversation that we're having. Like, should it? Would it? How could it? Because it does in the NFL. The NFL has changed the way that you're allowed to hit legally. What was legal 10 years ago is not legal today.
You're right about that, but in the NHL has. You could hit a guy in the head back in the day. You could hit anyone in any possible way.
Right.
That they have made those
upgrades. It's just another step in that direction if you want to go down that road.
Well,
you don't want to.
I think there's a lot of gray area there, though, in terms of what actually constitutes a healthy hit, a confirmed hit, a good hit.
Obviously.
And that's where someone's going to have to draw the line.
I want you guys to save this stuff, and we're going to go on a break. And when we get back, the battle continues.
Okay.
Johnny versus Hazy B on TSN 1050.
All right, we'll get back into Bryson DeChambeau and what he accomplished over the weekend. Kyle Lowry apparently is telling some people some things throughout the NBA. We'll get to that in just a moment. But I think we're on good terms here, Johnny. We're debating the essence of the sport of hockey, and that's what we're supposed to do here.
I honestly think I know – I don't know if you know this, Hayes, but I study people's personalities. I know a lot about that stuff. You two could go on about certain things for, I think, 2 hours.
Yeah.
I think you could have debated that body check for 2 hours straight.
I think you're right. Well, we were getting into a more big picture – you know, topic of the game, and I think it's an existential moment for the game.
I understand exactly what you were doing, but you were bringing in different elements would have kept coming from everywhere. Johnny brought up football, then it could have went to a Sidney Crosby hit from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I know that had potentially 2 hours left of gas in it.
I was thinking it through during the break. I had a baseball analogy that I'm ready to unload when we
need to. Go ahead. Throwing out of guys'
that's
head?
That's it. Exactly. That's it. Exactly. Like, you step into the box, you understand you might get hit by the ball. It comes with the territory. Are you good with that? Okay, let's play. If you're not, I'm not changing the sport because of you. And would we ever want to see that in baseball, where if a pitcher throws a ball above the shoulders, boom, you're out. Like, suspended, you're done, you're tossed from the game.
How are you going to control a pitcher? Well,
exactly. But you can't control hits when you're moving at that pace all the time. You can't control every single piece of contact in a fast-moving sport with monsters in a bordered, enclosed atmosphere.
By the way, obviously, Trevor Bauer, I have to bring this up because he's bothering me now. This guy is the highest-paid player in the league now. He's got his money, and he just won't stop being a moron. Like, he had to strike a guy out the other day with his eyes closed. He won't shut up. It's just he officially drives me crazy now. I can't stand that guy. I hope he gets dummied every time he goes on the mound.
He's probably going to win a World Series, which hurts. But
God, he's going to win a World
Take
Series.
The floor.
Go ahead,
take the floor,
John.
No.
I'm good. I'm good. I'm ready to move on. There's no right or wrong answer.
No, you're not.
I'm saying, listen, yeah, I'm 100%. If I think you're throwing at me on purpose in baseball, I'm 100% okay if I deem it intentional, and we kind of know when it's intentional, that if you throw at my head, then yeah, you get kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
You want to send a message? Hit me in the ribs. Yeah. I'm not going to lose my brain from getting hit in the ribs. So I'm okay with that change.
He's
you make
back
it seem like it's
hazy.
Absurd. It's not.
He's back in Hazy.
He's back.
Go ahead,
just
Hazy.
When we thought
just
you were
what
out.
I thought it was.
Hey,
out.
What's your response, Hazy?
There
you're
he
back
is. Michael
in.
Michael Corleone.
Hazy, back to you. Thoughts, please.
Well, again, I think if we keep this focused, we want to keep this on the rails. I'm not saying I'm a proponent of being hit in the head. I'm not. I like the league had to do this.
Seems it's, like you are it, okay with it.
No, oh. What I'm not okay with is shoulder on shoulder hits ever being a discussion. That's what I'm not okay with. Shoulder on shoulder. If it's a hit from behind or a hit to the head, you're gone. You should be. And penalize, suspend, do it. I'm a full supporter of that. If I hit you in the shoulder, I don't need to explain myself. And I got the impression like that's where you were going, Johnny, is like, well, what if you hit him and he falls into the boards awkwardly? Sorry, not my problem.
Well, there's a rule called boarding which says it doesn't have to be from behind if you just hit into the boards in a violent manner. Sometimes that violent manner could be a result of a shoulder to the sternum or shoulder to a shoulder. It doesn't have to be shoulder to the head. It doesn't even have to be from behind. Mm-hmm. There's a rule already in place. So I'm not asking them to expand the rule book. And if I hit a guy in the open ice and the shoulder on shoulder and he happens to tumble, I'm not talking about that. But you know where the danger areas are in the field, on the ice.
Yep.
And around the boards is them. And it's just putting more responsibility. And I think this is maybe the simplest way to put it. You're putting the responsibility of the outcome of the hit almost exclusively or far more on the hitter than the hittee. And that has never been the case in hockey.
Right.
That's a big change.
It is a big change, but I also think it's important to hold on to some of the shared responsibility. I'm fine, mm-hmm. and I'm a proponent of shifting it more and the majority of it being on someone who's throwing the hit. But we keep
I'm winning, oh.
No, you're not.
Let me throw the King Daddy topper on this for you okay? We're talking about changing hitting and all this stuff. This might be the third hit of the season.
Right.
Okay. In totality for the whole league.
Yep.
And now we're talking about how garbage it is, the body contact.
Well, you mentioned
nobody hits anymore and one guy goes to the hospital and it's like it's fake outrage all over, like, just come
on,
man.
And you referenced the outrage crowd. They've won. Like those in the media with prominent voices, those in the fan base of the sport that have been pleading for the league to throw the book at this, get rid of that, you've won. Like the game has drastically changed. It is in a very different place today than it was 10 years ago, let alone 30 or 40 years ago.
Revenge of the Nerds. Revenge of the Nerds coming in next break.
We have two or three hockey guys on the show right now. So I'll ask
you
this. Two and a half hockey dudes on the show.
Two.
Which event was worse in your eyes? The Tom Wilson hit on Brandon Carlo or the Brett Pesce slew foot on Robbie Fabry?
I'm going Pesce. I thought it was a greasy.
It's so gross.
Yep.
They called that a skate trip. Give me a break, man.
Textbook slew foot. Right. Guy could break his tibia, fibula, ankle in a heartbeat.
Johnny, what kind of mess would they have on their hands if his helmet popped off and his head smashed off the ice? Then you're looking at.
Or what if that is Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby? And he has a Eric Halla like break of his lower ankle leg.
Exactly. Yeah.
What if he doesn't?
Is that a $3,500 fine?
I don't think so. Who knows with this league? But everyone knows that is as greasy of a play as you can make. Everyone knows a slew foot. You see it in novice, peewee, all the way up, and there's always the same reaction. People losing their minds because it's so dangerous, and it was so intentional. Like, you don't do that. That Pesce knew exactly what he was doing.
It was so clean. On purpose. Out in the open, nobody around, and going slow. Anyways, that was just as part of the conversation here. It's just, protecting and injuries and history and reputation. But, I think most hockey people would be like, they were more turned off by the Pesce thing.
I think you're right.
And the conversation we're having over the top.
But it's not as sexy, quote unquote, or as controversial. Yeah. You know who's the luckiest guy in the league because everyone is talking about Tom Wilson is Rasmus Ristolainen, who was a part of the Matt Barzal goal and a really ugly part of that goal. What was he? I don't know what he was doing there. He's barely skating, and then he tries to catch up. He takes a tumble. He's in the corner. Barzal. That's the goal of the year probably right now.
Wow.
It's an incredible
goal. He fanned on it, though, Hayes. I mean, it's sick. I'm not going to doubt. He didn't put it under the bar. He kind of topped it and still rolled
in the
corner.
It still got in, man.
But
it went through the legs.
What was going on with Buffalo that weekend series? You had Ristolainen swimming on that goal.
Yep.
You had Taylor Hall on a breakaway catching a toe pick. You had Brandon Davidson looking like he had skate guards on when Kyle Clutterbuck scored.
They're getting punked every game, Johnny. They're getting punked every game. And it's getting to a point where you've seen some teams going through a tough go of it, but this team's getting kicked in the teeth every night. And it's like Ralph Kruger has to go in front of the mic and say, we have to learn our lessons, play our – I'm just like – I feel bad for the dude.
Roll the tape, Ralph Kruger.
I feel bad for the dude, man. I don't even know the guy, but I feel bad for the dude that he has to go out there and speak for that. They're a bunch of nice guys. I know a lot of them, not real well, but just like a guy like Taylor Hall. He's a great kid.
Yep.
He's a hell of a player. But what's going on there is it's almost out of this world. It's bizarre, man.
Ralph Kruger should tape his post-game presser before the game and just play it.
Just use the one from the last game.
They lost 5-2, 5-2 to the same team. He could have played the exact same thing. It was a tough break. Yeah, we got to figure it out. And it's the same thing every single day. We'll get back into Bryson DeChambeau. Players this week, we're into the official week of the Players' Championship, and it's going to be a fun week of golf. We're a month away from Masters Week. Al's brother still to come. We haven't even teased that. Al's brother has a two-pack of power rankings, and Johnny is here.
Oh, my God.
How great
Johnny,
is that?
Johnny, your buddy that you guys had an awkward introduction is coming with some heat in the 6 o'clock hour.
Yes, sir. And Ryan Russillo of The Ringer with a report, borderline bombshell, on Kyle Lowry and allegedly what Kyle's been telling people for the better part of a month. We'll get to that, too. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, there you go, O. You asked for it. Mullen plays it. The Revenge of
Keep
the Nerds.
Keep it playing.
Keep it
Tom
rolling.
Wilson went in the corner. He hit a guy hard. Suspend him. Revenge of the Nerds. Get him out of the game. Get him out of the game. Get him out of the game. Get it out of the game.
Not allowed. You're not allowed.
Listen.
You're not allowed.
Revenge of the Nerds. Revenge of the Nerds.
Al's brother coming up in about 45 minutes. Brian Russillo of the Ringer is really connected with the NBA. Just blurted this out. I think it was on the Bill Simmons podcast that, according to him, Kyle Lowry has been telling people for a month he's out.
Let me ask you this.
Toronto.
Do you believe that? I believe that report. He wouldn't say that. You have to know the facts before you blurt that out. If he has the same.
I think Russillo has. He is incredibly connected. I think he has heard that from legitimate people. I'm not sure. Clearly, he hasn't heard it from Lowry. He didn't say that he heard it from Kyle. He just said he has heard. Kyle has been telling people throughout the NBA for a month, and that is consistent with the NBA. The NBA has – there have been other storylines and other players over the last couple of years where word has leaked that they've just been telling people I'm getting traded and I'm moving on. And it would suggest one of two things. Kyle has either told the team, please trade me. You know, if you're thinking of moving me, I'll push this over the edge. I would like to move on to Philly, the Clippers, whatever, and pursue a championship because maybe he thinks it can't happen here. Or Masai is being honest with him. And up front, and he's reading the tea leaves, and Messiah basically said, we're looking into this, and if you're looking into it, that means you're probably going to push it overboard. So it's a significant news item, though. Like, Russillo's
not
being
just romantic.
Nobody.
Isn't that the, like, they probably should trade him? No?
Depends on what you want out of the season. If it's championship or bust, you trade him because you're not going to win a championship.
Exactly.
If you think you can win a round or two, you keep him, and you, if that's important
right.
to you.
But
right?
if you could get, I don't know what you could get, a first rounder. I don't know what Philly's picks are like. I don't know what the picks are like around the league or kind of player. But,
yep.
I mean, if you can get a good asset for him, you know, it's not going to happen for them this year. And maybe the championship buys them the luxury of building to one in 3-4 years, whenever that might be, because it's unlikely to be this year.
Yeah, they're not winning a championship this year. And the fact that they're not at home makes it easier to rip the Band-Aid off moving on from a legend like Lowry. We'll come back and discuss it more, like what would need to come back, why this would be, you know, circulating around the NBA. We'll get back into the golf, back into the Leafs, back in action tomorrow night. Al's Brothers, Power Rankings coming up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-aided.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.